Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you were listening right at the beginning of the show today, almost 2 hours ago now, you heard us talk about the changes in the organ donor laws in New York State that take effect today. And Elaine Berg, our guest from that segment, who's the president of the New York Organ Donor Network, has been nice enough to continue talking with some of you on our website ever since. And so if you're interested in continuing that conversation or seeing this interaction that continued after the show between one of our guests and a number of our listeners, you can go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and go to that organ donor segment. If you post a question there, she's probably going to follow up, I would think, and answer it if you're interested in that. Just letting you know, interesting thing breaking out today on the comments pages. And here's a question. Which is worse, being bored at work or working to death, literally? Well, obviously, we know the answer to which is worse. And in Japan, dropping dead at work is apparently common enough that they've given it a name. So with us now to talk about the deadly phenomenon known as karoshi and why the Japanese work past the point of no return more than perhaps in some other cultures, we have Daniel Rosenblum, Vice President and Director of Corporate and Policy Programs at the Japan Society here in New York. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to WNYC today.
Good morning, Brian.
Does this happen here and we just don't hear about it, or is this really a cultural phenomenon specific to Japan?
Well, I don't know if it's unique to Japan, but it certainly is accentuated in Japan. Last year in 2007, the Ministry of Health and Welfare and Labor judged that there were about 147 people who died directly as a result of overwork.
How do they trace it?
Well, it's a number of factors. It's the number of overtime logged, number of hours worked, and typically it's can be more than 100 hours in overtime per month or more. It's work that's way beyond the call of duty into the evening and sometimes overnight, several overnights, successive overnights. It's something that you wouldn't see much in the United States, but it's an obsessive compulsive attention to work and work-related issues.
Certainly nobody in New York has an obsessive-compulsive relationship with their work, that's for sure. But do they tend to die of certain things?
It's typically either cardiac arrest or, in some cases, aneurysms.
So cardiac-related, stress-related.
Stress-related, yes.
Events.
It's stress, and it's stress-related to a kind of implicit expectation that's in the Japanese workforce that you work until the task is done, and in often cases, overtime is not paid, but is expected. There aren't limits placed on the personal life versus the work life. Tend to have this sort of line in the sand that we have here is not there in Japanese life, corporate life, per se.
The way this came to our attention is that the Labor Bureau in Japan ruled last month, and this was in the news, that Toyota had to compensate the family of one of their chief engineers who died from heart failure after working over 100 hours of overtime a month for 6 months. Is there precedent for this kind of compensation?
Well, I think that was a landmark case. We've had since then also the Aichi Prefecture Labor Bureau making another ruling. I think it was another Toyota employee that his death was caused by overwork. And then just last week, there was a court in Saitama that declared a similar verdict for a restaurant manager. So these are starting to gain momentum. You didn't have this kind of judgments before. So I think you're going to see more and more awareness of this and more cases going through the legal system.
So companies are compensating workers' families, but are they changing their labor practices now as even a defensive legal measure?
They're having to. In a case, I think, where CSR, corporate social responsibility, has been a big buzzword in Japan, a lot of Japanese corporations are starting to implement policies that are more responsible towards their employees as part of their corporate social responsibility activities. Nikon, in particular, is one company that's stepped up in that area.
Do you think this problem can be solved by stricter labor laws, or will this change only if there's a cultural shift in the attitude toward work?
Well, you are seeing a cultural shift already. Younger Japanese, there is a larger group that are preferring to work part-time, that are not going into corporate Japan. There is a broader awareness that there's more to life than just sitting at a desk 12 hours a day, people looking for more personal fulfillment. So there are social trends that I think are going to mitigate this Kataoshi effect. At the same time, though, Japan is, as you know, has a shrinking population. It has a labor shortage, aging population. Immigration is very restricted, so there's fewer people to do the work. So I think that there is going to have to be more enforced in the way of laws to help safeguard this Kataoshi from happening in the future.
By the way, how much did this family of the Toyota engineer get? We actually did a segment earlier in the show on the value of each human life as determined by the Environmental Protection Agency in this country, feeding into how much they should be willing to spend on environmental regulation. And the EPA values an individual human life in the United States as being worth about $7 million. How much did this family of the Toyota worker get?
To be honest with you, I don't know, but knowing the way things go in Japan, probably not very much.
Really? According to the Wall Street Journal, more than 30,000 people every year commit suicide in Japan, which is almost double the rate of suicide in the United States. About half those people in Japan, according to the article, are unemployed. So do you think that Karoshi, this death at work from overwork, and these suicide statistics point to a certain relationship with work that is particularly Japanese?
Well, again, as I said, you know, as opposed to the United States, the work life is has been traditionally the primary identity, especially for males. Home life takes a way back seat for anything else, and so it's been the center and focus of life in Japan. But there's a certain amount of despondency, and it's partly generational, about the future in Japan, and that's been tied in part to the economy. So there is a higher preponderance of suicide overall in Japan for economic as well as social issues that are part and parcel of where the economy has been headed for the last 15 years.
They should let women into the workforce.
Indeed, they should. Japan has one of the poorest track records in that respect, with less than 1% of CEOs of Japanese corporations being women.
And, of course, this death at work, I guess, almost by definition, tends to happen mostly to men.
Almost exclusively, as far as I know. I don't know of any cases, and that's an interesting point, where women have been the ones who have died of overwork.
Right. And whether that's because, like in this country, women are more likely to, try to balance work and family, or whether that's just physiological, because men tend to die of heart failure at earlier ages than women do. I guess we can't really tease that out. But just tell us before you go about this word, karoshi. How does it actually translate, and how new is it?
Oh, the word's been around for a while. I mean, I've lived in Japan in the 1980s, and it was around then. She is death. There's any number of sort of words that have that. There's also kara jisatsu, committing suicide because of work. So, you know, there's several permutations on it, and it's not a new concept, but it is becoming more and more a part of awareness of the general population, and you do see more in the media. So I think that you're going to see some of this being handled and legitimately dealt with by labor law so that less of it occurs in the future.
All right. Daniel Rosenblum, Vice President and Director of Corporate and Policy Programs at the Japan Society here in New York. Thanks a lot for coming on with us.
My
pleasure. Interesting. This program was produced by Nuala McGovern with Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Taylor Orsi, Valerie Lipinski, and Rashida Winfield. Intern help today from Paige Cowett and Mick Creever-Brinkman. That's Debbie Daughtry at the audio controls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.